Thank you for listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. This is Connor filling in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. It is overcast, potentially still smoky out there, 69 degrees in Park City and 65 in Heber, with more on the weather here in the Wasatch Back from ABC's Meteorology Forecast Center. On the line is Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Good morning, Connor. Yeah, happy Thursday, Park City and Heber. We're looking at clouds this morning, as you mentioned. Should see some clearing into the afternoon, maybe a few sprinkles this morning, but a really good chance as a front moves in this evening of seeing some scattered showers and thunderstorms. Temperatures a little cooler today with the front moving in. 84 is expected to be the high for Park City, about 89 in Heber. Timing on the cold front, anywhere for the Wasatch front from 7 to 10, I think, for the Wasatch back shortly after that, depending on which models we're looking at. But either way, it should be an active evening into the overnight hours as the front moves through. We'll have lingering moisture Friday, continuing a chance for isolated showers and thunderstorms, partly cloudy skies otherwise. Temperatures about 83 for the high after 58 for the overnight low. A little bit of moisture hangs on through Saturday as well, but it clears out to the northeast. So not a washout of a day, I think, on Saturday, but plenty of few stray showers. 82 for the high. Sunshine taking over on Sunday. So the troughs that are passing through the Pacific Northwest will give us a little bit of unsettled conditions into the weekend, and we're hoping for some wetting rains, I guess, in some areas. But dry weather settles back in for next week after high pressure builds back in and those storms pass through the Northwest. We'll see mid-80s return on Monday for Park City, and we'll hang out in the mid-80s through about Wednesday with a high of 87 expected. In Heber, temperatures in the upper 80s today through the first part of the weekend, low 90s returning on Sunday. That chance of shower activity will stick around Heber City as well through at least Saturday morning. I think we'll clear out, though, and have a nice afternoon. Temperatures in the low 90s into next week with 92 on Monday, Tuesday. Overnight lows in the upper 40s and 93 on Wednesday for your high.
ABC 4 meteorologist Nate Larson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're keeping an eye this morning on what's now being called the Dicker Hill Fire. It's just west of Echo there. Utah Fire Info says it was first reported around 4:13 p.m. yesterday. It was around 10:30 acres shortly after 5, but by Wednesday night grew to 200 acres and counting. Now, authorities are reporting the fire has consumed hundreds of acres at this point, and it is threatening structures, underground gas lines, and power lines there in far northern Summit County. Summit County spokesperson Derek Sidaway told KPCW at least one residence has been evacuated north of Colville, and it's west of Interstate 80 there, west of the Echo community. Sidaway says the fire is continuing to grow quickly. The cause is under investigation. Utah Fire Info says air and ground resources had been called in yesterday. That includes a Northern Utah Type 3 incident management team. They rank those types from 1 being the most complex response to a fire, 5 being the least, so 3 right in the middle there. Again, the Dicker Hill Fire currently burning west of Echo, about 200 acres right now, fairly far, or a few miles west of the interstate, though, so traffic not being impacted. Coming up on the Local News Hour today, we'll be speaking first with the Wasatch County Parks and Recreation Marketing Coordinator, Jennifer Bowman, on Wasatch County Fair Day's Demolition Derby and Rodeo. And Jenny Dearsons from Park City Municipal will discuss logistics around the Extreme Soccer and Arts Festival. Then Park City Summit County Arts Council Marketing Manager Kendall Kelly talks about this month's gallery stroll on Friday night. And then tune in to the Cool Science Radio this morning at 9 a.m. after the Local News Hour. Lynn Ware-Peak and Katie Mullally host and talk with interstellar communication and extraterrestrial language and talk about interstellar communication and ET languages with science writer Daniel Oberhaus. Then they discuss the myths and truths of the creative brain with Anna Abraham, the director of the Torrance Center for Creativity and Talent Development at the University of Georgia. Those interviews coming up at 9 a.m. And we'll have more about traffic impacts about the Extreme Soccer Cup later in the hour as well. But we just got an update from Summit County about the Dicker Hill Fire that I mentioned. That's west of Echo, currently estimated now at 0% contained, and it has grown overnight to 250 acres now. That was, again, first reported at around 4:13 p.m. yesterday, a few miles west of Echo in the hills there. We'll keep an eye on it this morning. And now on the phone with me from Mountain Trails Foundation, Executive Director Laura Anthony has an update on the trails this weekend. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning and happy Thursday, Park City. We've got Dave from Basin Rec reporting that there are no big updates in their trail system. However, the Extreme Cup starts at the UOP, Utah Olympic Park, this weekend, and so it'll be very busy around the park. Maybe find somewhere else to go enjoy the trails. We are getting a couple of requests or inquiries, I should say, on the Yeti Trail, and that is a UOP trail. We wanted just to let folks know that they are working on getting that back and open, but it is not open yet. It looks like Mia from Wasatch Trails Foundation is reporting there's nothing much but dry and dusty trails out in the Heber Valley. There will continue to be construction around the Cutthroat Trailhead, so proceed with caution if you're using that area. Corey out at South Summit Trails is reporting that all trails in South Summit are good to go. And Rick at Mountain Trails is reporting today that we've got a big soccer tournament at Quinn's Junction this week through Saturday. So Quinn's Junction near the Round Valley Trailhead is probably not the greatest place to launch to be out on the trails. However, I will say those trails are pretty hot and dusty right now, so maybe not the best place to go anyway. We do have a dig day on Saturday from 9 to 12:30. We're going to be meeting at the hiking trail that's just off of, we're building a hand-built hiking trail off of the 9K trail. And you're going to meet, if you want to join us for that dig day, meet at the Bonanza Flat Trailhead and look for the feather flag. Mountain Trails will have a, you know, be pretty obvious where we're meeting. Bring water, long pants, sturdy hiking shoes, you know, gloves, everything you need to be out in the sun for a couple hours. This is going to be a really cool addition to the trail system where we have a hike-only hand-built trail. So kind of a fun, unique thing to add to the mix of our trails repertoire. That's about it. I hope you guys have a cool and safe weekend, and hope to see you out there.
All right. Laura Anthony at Mountain Trails, thanks so much for the update.
Yep, thank you.
Well, with the coming arrival of late summer and fall, that means it's time for county fairs. The Wasatch County Fair kicks off tomorrow with more on that on the phone with me. Wasatch County Parks and Recreation Marketing Coordinator Jennifer Bowman. Good morning, Jennifer.
Hi, Connor. How are you this morning?
Great. Great to hear from you. So the county fair is tomorrow, and you're beginning, I think, with one of the most popular and exciting events, the Demo Derby. What can you tell me about how you're going to kick this thing off?
Absolutely. It is a two-day action-packed event of crashing cars. It's probably one of Heber's most coveted and favorite events of fair days. And it starts with a bang. You know, it starts our fair days with a real bang. We have about 120 cars coming from all across the country today, or starting to arrive today. And tomorrow at 7 p.m. kicks off the first heat.
Gotcha. So where are the fairgrounds for those who've never attended? And are there any logistics to keep in mind over the course of the next week or so?
Definitely. The fairgrounds are located on the corner of Midway Lane, which is Heber City's 100 South and Southfield Road. There's an indoor and outdoor arena there. A lot of our Fair Days events take place within Southfield Park, which is right there. The outdoor arena, which is for the Demo Derby, the Special Needs Rodeo, and the Mountain Valley Stampede, which is the following weekend. And then indoor arena hosts our livestock sales, 4-H, and the exhibits for local spectators. Our entire schedule is available online. But it's a fun thing. There's a little bit of road work going on, so definitely be cautious of that. Some rock chipping that Heber City's got going. But otherwise, they've just been doing it for years and years. So it's a really great experience for guests.
Yeah, and you mentioned the exhibits. There's going to be junior livestock and sales, barbecue, talent shows lined up, concerts and other things. Is it too late to become a vendor or participate in some of these activities? And is it spectators only at this point?
Not at all. All of our registrations are still live on our website, wasatchparksandrec.com. And then just click on Fair Days and everything is still there. We have our country market, which sits beside our carnival next week. We're still looking for great vendors for that. We have some amazing ones already, but we can definitely host more. And then as far as exhibits, definitely can host more exhibits and would love to have local talent within the exhibits for sure.
And how do tickets work? Is it one ticket for the whole fair? Like, will the rodeo sell its own separate tickets, for example? I know Demolition Derby is already sold out, right?
Yep. Demolition Derby sold out day of when tickets went on sale. But the carnival, we still have our pre-sale vouchers available for $25 each, which gets you like an all-day wristband. Those can be purchased at the rec center. And then we also, you know, at the carnival itself, there are, you know, you can take a single ride, you can do the games, you know, kind of whatever works for your family. Mountain Valley Stampede Rodeo is August 1st through 3rd, and there are still plenty of great seats available for that. All of the other fair exhibits are open to the public. Our barbecues are first come, first served. No reservation required. Just show up, eat, and have a great time.
All right. And so you mentioned the Mountain Valley Stampede Rodeo is going to be the highlight of next week. That's PRCA sanctioned. So potentially some talent there. What can you tell me about, you know, the crowds this draws and any stars to expect?
So we have not seen the lineup yet. That's typically released week of. But we really see some fantastic cowboys and cowgirls. We have added money this year, for each of our events, which is a huge draw. So the Thursday night rodeo is actually probably, you know, one of the most talent filled, so that these cowboys and cowgirls can continue on to the next rodeos on Friday and Saturday. So different talent each night, but incredible talent nonetheless. Like I said, amazing tickets still available for that. Thursday starts a little bit earlier at 7, and then Friday and Saturday are at 7:30. Friday is also a special day because we host the Mountain Valley Roundup, which is formerly known as the Mountain Valley or the Special Needs Rodeo. And that's at 9 a.m. That is completely free of spectators, and we get about 100 participants for that rodeo. And it's spectacular.
Will it be the same format as the Special Needs Rodeo, just under a different name?
It is, exactly.
Gotcha. Yep. And then Thursday night with the rodeo is military night as well. So any special events planned for that?
We're definitely going to be highlighting our local military. We've invited several of our veterans that attended our Memorial Day celebration earlier this year. And we really try to highlight our local active and veteran military, first responders. You know, they're obviously a huge part of our community, but also to Parks and Rec for sure. So just a little bit more of a highlight for them, and making them feel warm and welcome.
Definitely. I'm curious, how big is the purse now for the PRCA rodeo?
So that, let's see. I knew you were going to ask me that one.
Well, if you don't have the number, but I'm curious, like, how do you fundraise for it? How have you been able to expand it?
Yeah. So the rodeo itself, I know it's a $20,000 added purse. So it's an added, what's that, $160,000 for the rodeo, which is absolutely incredible, which makes us a standout rodeo. So as far as the entire purse goes, PRCA kind of helps with that. So we definitely offset, but ticket sales are a huge part of that. Concessions are a huge part of that. And then I'm also over the sponsorships, and we have some fantastic local sponsors that really help us push these bigger events. That's kind of an all hands on deck, just making them special for the community.
All right. Well, there's no certain forecast for next weekend, but this weekend I know a little bit of chance of precipitation. How could that potentially impact the fair? I could see it making the demolition derby better, but, you know, just any, right. any rain impacts and things for people to be aware of?
Rain, we're not as concerned about. Wind, we definitely don't like wind. We had a circumstance where a tent got taken away. We definitely don't like wind. As far as pivoting, definitely watch our social media, Facebook and Instagram pages for updates on that. But we just like to roll with the punches and keep it open if possible, because it is a coveted community event.
All right. Jennifer, anything else you want to mention right now?
I don't believe so. We do still, like I said, have great tickets available for the Mountain Valley Stampede. And we would love to have as many people there as possible. It is such a fantastic rodeo. And for those of you that don't have tickets to the Demolition Derby, it is streamed live for free by Trackshot Live. They're in the action trackside talking about the drivers, which many of them are locals that you'll, you know, recognize names of. So they can be found on YouTube and Trackshot Live. So they great way to watch the Derby if tickets were unavailable.
All right. Well, good luck to the drivers and everyone participating in the county fair. Again, the Wasatch County Fair kicks off tomorrow with the Demolition Derby. We've been speaking with Jennifer Bowman from Wasatch County Parks and Rec. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Connor. You have a great day.
You too. And while Utahns joined together in downtown Salt Lake early yesterday to celebrate the Winter Olympics coming back in 2034, KPCW's Parker Malatesta stayed up and was there.
Organizers behind Utah's bid to bring back the Olympics requested a final vote by the International Olympic Committee on Wednesday to coincide with the Pioneer Day state holiday. Families were lined up overnight along the streets downtown in anticipation of the Days of 47 parade later Wednesday morning. The big news came shortly after 4 a.m. when IOC officials voted to approve the Salt Lake City bid for 2034, and the crowds approved. Murray resident Missy Betts says she's been ready for the games to come back ever since Utah last hosted in 2002.
It was so awesome. I think that's why anybody who was here then is so excited to do it again, because it was so wonderful.
Salt Lake resident Kelly Haas was in her pajamas. She said missing sleep was worth seeing the historic announcement.
This is, I mean, once in a lifetime. It was here in 2002, but to be able to see this announcement and then know it's going to be here in 10 years and maybe take our future kids to it one day is so cool.
Chris Vogt also attended the early morning event. Reminiscing on the 2002 Winter Games, he said he was encouraged to try out bobsled after seeing it live.
2002, I was a freshman in college, and so we came down here to Salt Lake and watched a lot of the events. It was just so cool to see Salt Lake on that world stage back then in 2002. It definitely inspired a lot of us to at least watch the games, and it kind of inspired me trying out for the sport, you know, 4 years later.
Vogt found success in bobsled, competing at 3 Olympics and winning 1 silver medal. He was named head coach of the USA bobsled team last year. Vogt said they plan to use the 2034 Games announcement as a recruiting push.
So we're hosting a combine at the Olympic Oval, 17th of August, trying to recruit local talent to put them on, you know, to win medals in 2034.
The combine is for both bobsled and skeleton. The top 3 participants will be flown to the U.S. Olympic Training Center in Lake Placid for a rookie camp. More details can be found at kpcw.org. Park City is hosting its own celebration of the game's return later Wednesday at Utah Olympic Park from 4 to 9 p.m. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And then in Wasatch County yesterday, many Utahns enjoyed Pioneer Day celebrations in Wallsburg and Charleston, drawing crowds from both the Heber Valley and beyond Wasatch County. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has this story.
Temperatures in the upper 90s didn't deter Utahns from celebrating their heritage with all-day festivities in the Heber Valley Wednesday. Residents of Wallsburg, a town of 300 people east of Deer Creek Reservoir, lined the streets early Wednesday morning for a holiday parade. Led by the national and state flags, dozens of people processed from the center of town to the park on roller skates, bicycles, 4x4s, tractors, and horses. Ann Nabom waited along the road to spot her grandson in the parade. Her granddaughter performed as a dancer later in the day, too. Colin Kingsbury sat with her. He says his ancestors were among the pioneers who arrived in Utah in the 1840s.
One of my great-great-grand-somethings, he came over with the pioneers.
For Anna Cox, who spent the holiday in nearby Charleston, the history feels very recent.
Brigham Young said, this is the place, and they decided to settle it. And they decided to work hard to make it work here in this really, like, hard, hostile environment. I just got to go on a pioneer trek this summer where I walked with 100 teenagers for 4 days and pulled a hand car, and we learned a lot about the pioneers and their sacrifices and their struggles and how much faith they had to find a place where they wouldn't be persecuted and wouldn't be driven out.
Wallsburg locals Ray and Lori Birch said they have a personal connection to the holiday too. Their ancestors pulled hand carts and helped settle the town.
So this is the thing we've been coming to for 40 plus years.
There were games for children in the town park, like a dunk tank, a ring toss, and a mini train ride for the holiday's youngest celebrants. Southwest of Heber and Charleston, population 400, celebrations continued into the evening with a fireworks show. Residents enjoyed an antique car show, a cornhole tournament, and a root beer chugging contest. The holiday is full of fun for the whole family. Cox says it's an important reminder of the community's history, too.
It's an incredible day to remember our roots, our heritage, the sacrifices of the people that helped develop this state.
People from Wasatch County and across the state spent Pioneer Day doing just that. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And you're listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. This is Connor Thomas filling in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. And here with me in studio is Park City Municipal's Special Events Manager, Jenny Dearson. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So we've got to talk logistics about a couple different events. This weekend, we've got Park City Extreme Cup, the next Kimball Arts Festival. So let's, I guess, begin with the Extreme Cup. It's a pretty big one. So overall, what can we expect in town starting today?
I would just remind the community the next two weekends are big ones. It's going to be busy weekends, and please plan ahead. Extreme Soccer Tournament is a local soccer tournament. A lot of people I talk to are kind of like, who are all these people and why are they all here? It is our local soccer club, and this is a major fundraiser for them, raises funds for lots of our local youth to be able to play soccer year-round. It's a very important event. I believe there's about 30,000 people that participate in this event. That's between the players and the spectators. And so really this event encompasses, I would say, kind of all of Wasatch back. So Park City, Summit County Fields, as well as Heber City and surrounding areas. And I just also wanted to say we have so many local youth that are so talented in playing in this tournament. So when you're around this weekend, I would expect increased traffic on the roads, but also slow down, especially in the parks and fields area, and watch for the kids that are out there playing. So just slow down in those areas and pay extra attention and give yourself a little extra time.
Definitely. The venues I know of in town, they're already setting up at Ecker Hill Middle School. Quinn's Junction will be used, but it'll be in Francis, Oakley, and Heber as well. So will these venues, when they're being used for the tournament, be kind of closed off for other activities as well?
They're not closed off. So for instance, at Quinn's, there's still trailhead parking. And so we've kind of sectioned off certain areas where there's event parking, and we've tried to separate out for trailhead parking. But again, if you are headed out there on those trails, just be aware it's going to be super busy. I was out there this morning at around 7:15 just looking at the setup for the event, and the kids were already showing up. So again, the tournament is all day long. So when you're in these areas, just be aware, or maybe choose to go somewhere else if you don't want to be impacted on those trails.
All day Thursday through Saturday. Are there any, transportation plans, potentially extra busing? Are you organizing things with the teams like that, or will it be mostly, just every man for himself on the roads for a little bit?
The tournament works really hard to get teams to carpool, and they do also promote our local transit options, but there is no specific increased transit from any specific lots for the tournament that I'm aware of.
Okay, gotcha. So moving to the Kimball Arts Festival, that's next weekend, August 2nd through 4th. What can you tell me about plans for that one?
Yeah, so this is our annual festival. It's 55 years this year. I think that's a really big deal. I think I've attended the last 18 years, which is kind of crazy.
Congratulations.
But a huge, important event for our local art center. I believe more than 200 artists will be there, and lots of fun activities for the full family. So the event is August 2nd to 4th. Really, impacts will start on Wednesday next week, where we will take both the Bob Wells Plaza as well as the Brew Pub parking lot to start setting up for those operations. That's here in kind of downtown Park City near Main Street. And then really starting at 3 o'clock in the morning next Friday, August 2nd, we will close all the major roads. So Main Street, Heber Avenue, Sweet Alley, Park Avenue will be impacted. All of those roads will kind of shut down to set up the full event, and it'll open next Friday night around 5 o'clock. And then the roads will be closed through Sunday evening. I guess you could say Monday morning at midnight, but Sunday at midnight, we anticipate those roads to be closed until then.
Gotcha. And this one's got plenty of free parking and free transit available. So could you give people who've never taken the bus a run through of all the different park and rides available?
Yeah, so these events, they take a lot of collaboration with many partners. So we're lucky enough to have the Park City School District, Park City Mountain Resort, and Deer Valley all participate in this partnership for these big weekends that we have. We will be running increased transit from those locations throughout the duration of the event. Our transit team has worked really hard. I think in most of those areas, we have 10-minute frequency. And then probably, as you know, over the past year and a half, our transit team has really worked hard to bring the Richardson Flat Park and Ride on board and support that with additional service. So the Richardson Flat Park and Ride will be running also 10-minute frequency throughout the duration of the festival. And again, I think these kinds of collaborations just go to show, you know, what we can all do together and just get on the bus and have some fun. Parking will be extremely limited in town next weekend.
And I am seeing for the snow park lots at Deer Valley, no parking after 3 p.m. due to some concerts there.
Yes, Deer Valley has concerts every evening of the festival, and so they ask that after 3 o'clock there's no festival parking. But if you're going earlier in the day, you can park there, and then at night they need that lot cleared out for their concerts.
And it's a familiar sight with a lot of these special events in town now, the bus lane on Deer Valley Drive. Is that relatively new? And what can you tell me about how that's been working?
The bus lane on Deer Valley Drive is not new, but it is something that we've done kind of year after year and seen great success with. And so really when we create that bus lane, the bus gets to bypass the traffic and come all the way into town. So that is something we will also be implementing next weekend on Deer Valley Drive, and you'll see that up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay, gotcha. So what are the paid parking hours or parking options that could get you a little bit closer to town if needed?
If needed, China Bridge parking structure will be your best bet in terms of city parking facilities. So on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, that rate is going to be $9 an hour or a maximum of $40 if you're staying here, if you reach that max. And then I also just wanted to mention there's a bunch of private parking lots around town that guests can also park in. Those have different pay structures and different rates because they're private parking lots. But in terms of in town, if you're looking for parking, China Bridge will be your best bet.
And you do permitting for in-town parking. Who is that available to?
Yeah, so we have permits available for mainly for businesses and employees. There's also a couple of residents on Main Street that we have to accommodate. But if you have one of those permits, the best place to park is going to be the North Marsac parking lot, Gateway, which is on Heber Avenue. And if those overflow, then we do consider China Bridge as a last and final option. I think for the Kimball Arts Center, it is really important to mention for businesses and employees that the flagpole parking lot is not available because the Kimball Arts Center has to use that for their operations. So again, those employees and businesses looking for parking, best option is definitely going to be the Gateway and North Marsac.
Gotcha. And the offbeat options, there's bike valet available. Is that free?
The bike valet is available. I believe it is free. The Kimball Arts Center runs that. And I believe that is down at 9th Street. So kind of a little bit in the location where you see Silly Markets.
I think that's where it was last
year. Bike valet. Yeah. And so we love that they run that. They see tons of bikes. It is important to note that bike valet closes when the festival closes. So if you're going to stay later, just plan on additional bike parking somewhere else. And then I also wanted to mention next weekend is a big weekend for hotel shuttles and taxis and ride shares. And so the best place to do drop unloading if you're looking to pick up a cab or if you're coming from a hotel or something is the South Marsac lot. And we actually take the parking away from there and create kind of a big roundabout to accommodate those larger shuttles.
Gotcha. And you do have a text line for alerts for people who want real-time updates. If stuff changes on the ground, how can they learn more?
The best thing to do is to text PC events, that's all one word, to 888-777, and we will send information when parking's full or if there's a major accident. A couple years ago, we actually had a power outage, so we were texting, text that out. So all the things that can happen, that's the best way to find out the information as fast as possible. And then I also wanted to mention resident access passes were distributed in January and then again in early June. If you have lost your resident access pass and you're a resident of Old Town or you're just coming into town and can't find it, please reach out to us directly and we'll make sure you get that pass so you can get to your homes throughout Old Town through the checkpoints that we have set up.
Gotcha. Well, what other events are coming up around town that people need to be aware of?
Yeah, so August is a busy month for us. We do have several concerts up at Deer Valley through the next month, but I wanted to mention that this weekend we have the 1812 Overture. That's on Friday up at Deer Valley, Funk Legends on Saturday, and then next week is Michael Fronte. That's going to be on Wednesday night. I wanted to remind folks that there is no Silly Market this weekend or all of August. That event will return to Main Street on September 1st. I wanted to highlight maybe a fun local secret, but on this coming Sunday, the Summer Slide at Park City Library will be out. So that's an event that's from 11 to 2, really fun for the family. They'll have yard games, bubbles, and a kind of a giant slip and slide out there so the community can come together and just hang out. And then I also wanted to mention just a couple other events. On Friday, August 9th, there's going to be the Offset Beer Party. That's something that Offset Brewing started doing. Last year, they saw a lot of success, small band and just a fun community gathering. But that'll be at South End City Park on Friday, August 9th. The Back Alley Bash, KPCW's Back Alley Bash, is coming up. I believe that that's on Friday, August 16th. And that'll be the same weekend as the Song Summit. So that'll be a fun weekend in town, but come support KPCW. And that's always a fun local event, a great thing to come out to. Back to school is quickly approaching on August 20th. And then also wanted to mention kind of another kind of jurisdictional between multiple jurisdiction event is August 24th, and that's the NAC Summit Challenge. And so just as you're thinking about seeing these things through the weekend, through the various weekends coming up in August, again, kind of make sure you slow down, especially with the Summit Challenge. Lots of people participate on that. There are bikes on the roads and want to make sure people pay attention.
It's not necessarily road closures for that as well.
Yeah, just a lot of bikers on the road, a lot of sharing the road for that specific event that I want to make sure that people knew about. But a fun but busy August ahead of us. And, you know, fall's around the corner. My husband told me not to say that, but it is. And so I hope people are out there enjoying the summer.
Cool. All right. Well, anything else you want to mention? That's enough events for 1 month. But
that is a lot of things going on, and I just hope everyone is having fun out there. Thank you.
All right. We've been speaking with Jenny Dearson, Special Events Manager at Park City Municipal. Thanks so much, Jenny.
Thanks.
And I continue to report on parties, as yesterday was chock full of them. It was Pioneer Day. And with the news that Utah will host the Winter Olympics again in 2034, hundreds gathered at the Utah Olympic Park to celebrate. KPCW's Christine Weller reports past, present, and future Olympians were all in attendance.
The Park City area celebrated the return of the Winter Olympics Wednesday at the Utah Olympic Park. Hundreds of people sporting 2002 Games apparel and red, white, and blue showed up to celebrate together. Live music set the jovial tone as families visited various games-themed booths to trade Olympic pins, share their memories from 2002, and learn about legacy programs. The Utah Olympic Park set out a cardboard Olympic torch for everyone to sign. Adults signed up high, while little ones signed down low. Olympic athletes were at the center of the festivities, signing posters and talking to visitors. Olympic freestyle mogul skier Nick Page was among those there.
So special to be able to connect with our community here in Utah and have kids coming up to me saying I want to be in the Olympics in 10 years and be like, hey, yeah, me too.
Page said the 2002 Olympic legacy in Utah shaped his life. He grew up in Park City and trained to be an Olympian in facilities built for the 2002 Games. Enrica Christiansen and her two children also came to celebrate and meet the Olympians. She said she watched the 2002 Games on TV from her home country of Germany. Her family moved to Park City 2 years ago, and Christiansen's two children are enrolled in 2002 legacy skiing programs. Her daughter Ellie now has Olympic aspirations.
She's going to be in a U12 race series here this year, and so it's the first time that she's really seriously racing, so we're excited.
Lori Hamburger wore a plush hat featuring Powder the Snowshoe hair as she posed with Copper the Coyote, both mascots from the 2002 Games. Hamburger volunteered for the opening and closing ceremonies in 2002. She said she went through training on how to hold her hands and got to meet athletes from all over the world.
It was a blast. I think anybody that has a chance to do it, they would just have a great old time.
The highlight of the festivities was the Flying Ace All-Stars Freestyle Show. During the show, the crowd cheered on national team skiers and current and aspiring Olympians as they performed acrobatic flips off jumps of varying sizes into the Spence Eccles Olympic Freestyle Pool. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And ticket revenue for the 2034 Olympics is expected to cover about a third of the $4 billion bill for hosting, but organizers say tickets will still be sold at affordable prices. The Salt Lake City, Utah Committee for the Games plan allows residents to cut the ticket line and save money. Fraser Bullock, the president and CEO of the committee, says about 34,000 tickets will be available at $34 each for Utahns. The Salt Lake Tribune reports there will also be more expensive ticket packages to help cover the cost along the way with hospitality funds. And the Sundance Institute offered an early bird ticket sale for the first time this weekend. Tickets sold out in one day. For the first time ever, Sundance launched its early bird ticket sale for the 2025 Film Festival here in Park City. A limited number of ticket packages and passes went on sale Tuesday, but by yesterday they were sold out. The sale was originally going to last 1 week. The in-person locals package was $650. The non-local package was $850. A package for access to an all-in-person Salt Lake City screening was $550. Regularly priced tickets will go on sale sometime this fall at a date to be announced. Sundance has not yet announced how much the tickets will cost as well. Sundance encourages festival goers to sign up for its emails so they can be informed about when passes go on sale. The 2025 Sundance Film Festival will mirror last year's event with more than 90 feature films and more than 50 shorts. In-person screenings will run January 23rd to February 2nd. Online screenings are January 30th to February 2nd. And with Utah again winning the Olympics bid yesterday, KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports Wasatch County is ready to play its role.
The much-anticipated bid was awarded to Utah as a crowd cheered at an overnight watch party in downtown Salt Lake City Wednesday. A delegation from Utah traveled to Paris to attend the announcement in person. This will be the second time the state will host the Winter Games. Events are planned in and around Salt Lake and across the Wasatch Pack. Olympic and Paralympic cross-country skiing, biathlon, and Nordic combined athletes will compete at the Soldier Hollow Nordic Center. Soldier Hollow General Manager Luke Bodensteiner says the venue is ready to host the world's best.
That's one of the unique things about the bid. We're ready really now to be able to host these games. The venues like Soldier Hollow have had continuous investment and reinvestment in them, you know, over the course of the year since the 2002 games.
Soldier Hollow has regularly hosted major competitions in the years since, including this winter's International Biathlon Union World Cup. New renovations and expansions have further prepared the facility for another Olympics.
At this point, really, it's just about maintaining the quality that we have and refining the facilities.
Heber City Mayor Heidi Franco says the community is ready to help support the games.
The Valley wants to cheer on and welcome these athletes, and being able to welcome these Olympic athletes here, it's just part of our nature to be good neighbors and to try to achieve excellence in our own lives.
She says Heber is investing in new amenities and infrastructure in part to support the games.
We have world-class beauty here. We have world-class opportunities with the Olympics, you know, and we are ready to welcome the world.
And Bodensteiner says in the next decade, he's excited to get the community involved. About 500 youth participate in programs at Soldier Hollow, some of whom aspire to represent Team USA in 2034.
It's a unique position for us to have 10 years now to go through the process of planning these games. And, you know, that gives us a leg up on sort of the logistical and operational aspects. But I think it also gives us just a great runway to get our communities involved, give kids the opportunity to participate in these sports and be a part of the Olympic movement. And we'll put every one of those 10 years to good use.
For full coverage of the 2034 Winter Olympics announcement, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Here with me in studio now is Kendall Kelly. She's the marketing manager at the Park City Summit County Arts Council. Kendall, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So a lot of art stuff on the horizon, you know, Kimball Arts next week, but tonight, free concert. What can you tell me about that?
Yes, so we've reintroduced the free art piano concerts at our public art piano locations. This evening is going to be at the Kimball Junction Library. So we'll be featuring a Utah Symphony performance. We have a viola player and a pianist that will be coming out. These are free concerts that are available to the public. So if you come to that Summit County Library in Kimball Junction at 5 p.m., that will be a really cool offering.
And this just dawned on me. These are the art pianos that are painted that you find scattered around Summit County. It's kind of like a scavenger hunt to find them all.
Yes, yeah, exactly. The next one will be at the Colville location, actually. So we've had one already at Kimball Junction just last week. So this will be our second one so far. And then there's two more slated for August.
Cool. Free at 5 p.m. tonight. And then tomorrow, the gallery stroll. So what's special about this week's gallery stroll?
This week's gallery stroll is the usual last Friday of the month. We have all of the different galleries that participate. You want to keep an eye out for Park City Gallery Association's flags. It's always fun to be able to experience some art, get refreshments, enjoy some live music at different locations. One thing that we certainly love to encourage is for everyone to come check out our Create PC location as well, which is over on Kearns Boulevard, 1500 Kearns Boulevard.
All right. And we were speaking in the last segment with Park City Special Events Coordinator Jenny Dearson about some of the logistics mm-hmm. around Kimball Arts Festival. There are some closures. We'll put those on kpcw.org. But the first night's always locals' night. So how do locals make sure they are certified local, I guess?
Yeah, so we always like to chat about our fellow nonprofit, Kimball Arts Center. They are hosting their 55th annual Arts Fest next week, and the Locals Night is a really great opportunity for everyone to get to go and enjoy the festival. It is something that you have to purchase tickets ahead of time. You cannot go to the gate the night of and be able to get them. So if you get your tickets for Locals Night ahead of time, you'll be able to go on Friday evening for free. You do need to have proof of being a Summit County resident, and then you're able to enjoy all the fest has to offer on that evening.
Have you been involved with planning at all at the Arts Council or any, you know, coordinating any of the artists that are going to come and showcase their work?
That's a really great question. We actually do not plan the Kimball Arts Fest. We work with a lot of the artists that are participating in the festival. So there's going to be quite a few that are actually at our Create PC Gallery. For those that don't know about the Create PC Gallery, it's a local artist studio that is for Summit County residents. It's a really great place to provide support for local artists. But a bunch of those artists are participating in the Arts Festival. They were selected by Kimball Arts Center. So separate, but it's very cool to get to see some of our own artists in the fest.
Yeah, and I mean, so lots of local artists will come, but really from far and wide, lots mm-hmm. of different states. Any international artists that you've heard of this year?
I actually was just going through the whole list of artists the other day, and there wasn't a whole lot. I feel like I saw one international artist, but there was quite a few from the West, which I really thought was very cool to see, mm-hmm. and a couple from the East Coast, but very exciting.
Still exciting. And yeah. About a month away, your Art on the Trails performance. What's this for people who've never attended?
Absolutely. So we actually just launched the ticket sales for Art on the Trails. This is one of our few events that we actually do ticket sales for. You do want to get those sooner than later because they do sell out. This particular event connects art and culture and nature on McLeod Creek Trail. It starts at Copper Moose Farm Stand, and from there you're able to walk along the trail and immerse yourself in different performances and art experiences. So it's going to be a art experience in a natural setting, and it's something that we definitely encourage people to buy tickets as soon as they can.
And is that where the interactive kind of musical sculpture is? On the trail there? I don't know. It might be a little Easter egg for people on the trail.
I would say so. I know exactly what you're talking about.
As you're going up, look left, like where the Beaver Dam used to be.
It is along that area, and so we will, as you start at Copper Moose Farm Stand, you'll have different locations spaced throughout, and you will go near that interactive music area. So you'll see performances from Salt City Circus. You'll see live music. There's going to be a figure skating actually set up where they're going to be not on ice, obviously, but something that works for them in that setting.
And where can people go to get tickets?
On our website, so you can go to PCSEArts.org and visit our Art on the Trails program page. We do have links to that on our social media. There's going to be an Eventbrite where you'll be able to purchase those tickets and select the time slots, because it goes for every 20 minutes, there's a tour that heads out.
Good stuff. Anything else you want to mention?
We would love for everyone to just come see us at Create PC tomorrow evening for Park City Gallery Stroll. And then we'd love to see you at tonight's Art Piano exhibit at Kimball Junction.
Again, 5 p.m. tonight, and it's free.
All right, thank you.
We've been speaking with the marketing manager at Park City Summit County Arts Council, Kendall Kelly. Well, nonprofit Bridge 21 Park City has selected a new executive director, and KPCW's Christine Weller reports the organization's focus to develop independent housing for the local neurodiverse community.
Established in January 2020, Bridge 21 is a local nonprofit aiming to provide an inclusive community for the area's neurodiverse population. Longtime Parkite Stephanie Polakoff was named executive director in early July. Polakoff has more than 34 years of experience as a pediatric occupational therapist, including 17 years with the Park City School District. During her time as an occupational therapist, she supported kids with autism, Down syndrome, Williams syndrome, and other developmental delays. But Polakoff started to wonder if her work at the district was helping kids learn independent living skills so they could live independently with support.
I really felt like I was not seeing that happen from a professional standpoint. I didn't see people with neurodiversities living alone or living alone with support, or really even going to jobs a lot or recreating a lot out in the community.
That's why Polakoff and parents of children with developmental delays started Bridge 21, to bridge the gap for children aging out of the school system. Children in special education programs have the opportunity to stay in the school system until they're 21, but have limited options after they have to leave.
Where are they going to live? Where are they going to work? How are they going to get there? Who's going to support them? Who's going to take care of them? You know, there's a gap there that is really difficult for families to navigate.
There are three pillars needed to support neurodiverse people: housing, work, and recreation. Polakoff says the National Ability Center does a great job with the recreation pillar, and Bridge 21 aims to fulfill the housing pillar. Bridge 21 broke ground on Summit County's first cognitively accessible affordable housing this month in Silver Creek Village. Polakoff says she's currently working on acquiring two or three more homes in the same neighborhood. She's also creating an application process for neurodiverse people who want to live independently in a Bridge 21 home.
Our residents will need to be able to follow directions, need to be able to wake themselves up and, you know, handle their own hygiene, and then be safe in the kitchen. Other than that, you know, we'll have a lot of support. We'll have verbal, physical, visual supports for them.
The home will have remote monitoring technology to help keep residents safe. For example, a water meter will make sure a faucet is not left running, potentially flooding the home. The home is expected to be ready by March 2025. Polakoff says she hopes to create neurodiverse pocket communities in Park City and Wasatch County in the future. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And Utah has seen a spike in traffic fatalities this summer. Around Pioneer Day now, state officials are urging residents to drive safely after 12 people died on Utah's roads last week. It was the worst one-week total in nearly 2 years. That, according to a joint report from the Utah Department of Transportation and Department of Public Safety. The agencies monitor traffic fatalities every year, paying special attention to the so-called 100 deadliest days, the period between Memorial Day weekend and Labor Day, when traffic deaths trend upwards. According to their report, during the 8 weeks since the 2024 Memorial Day holiday, there have been 56 fatalities. In 2023, Utah saw a total of 81 fatal accidents during the roughly 15 weeks. Officials from both UDOT and DPS expressed concern over the number of fatalities recorded at the midpoint of the summer season. In a Tuesday news release, they urged Utahns to drive safely, buckle up, and stay alert behind the wheel, especially during festivities this week. For the first time in at least 5 years, motorcycles have topped the list of fatal vehicle crashes. There have been 12 fatal motorcycle crashes during the 100 deadliest days so far, up 14% compared to the last 5 years. Yearly traffic fatalities were trending 14% lower last year when compared to 2022, but state officials worry there will be an increase this year. There have been a total of 145 traffic fatalities in 2024 compared to 279 in 2023. And in other news, the son of Heber City's chief of police is being held without bail after he admitted to sexually abusing elderly women in the memory care unit where he worked. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has this report.
20-year-old Jaden Parker Sever has been charged with attempted rape and object rape of two elderly women. The alleged crimes were committed while Sever worked as a caregiver at Spring Garden Senior Living in Heber. He told an investigator from the Utah Attorney General's office that he had sexually abused two women in the memory care unit, both in their 80s, both with advanced dementia, in February and March 2024. The Utah Attorney General's office began an investigation after Sever told his father, Heber Police Chief Parker Sever, what he had done.
This behavior, these crimes that he committed, are not something that I ever thought that he was capable of. He confessed them to me, and I reported him to the Attorney General's office for criminal charges. My thoughts and prayers go out to the victims of the crime.
He said his son's actions were unjustifiable.
KPCW's Grace Dorfler reporting. We are keeping an eye on the growing Dicker Hill fire west of Echo, a few miles up into the hills. We heard 45 minutes ago it is 0% contained after it was reported around 4 o'clock yesterday. It's grown to about 250 acres. The Utah Fire Info reports that Type 3 incident management teams have been deployed, as well as air and ground resources. We'll be reporting on that throughout the day. You can hear all of these stories again and read them online at kpcw.org.